It was an old-fashioned impulse of public service journalism for the old-fashioned Post and Courier newspaper in Charleston, South Carolina. After looking at some alarming statistics about women murder victims in the state, the editors decided to investigate why South Carolina ranks so high in incidents of domestic violence. Their 8-month investigation put faces and voices behind the statistics.
There were nightly fights. Physical, emotional abuse was always in the house. He would grab her arms really, really tight to the point that there would be bruising left. He would slap her. He would hit her. Very, very violent, very, very loud, very, very physical.
That is Tina Abbasi speaking about her abused mother who was eventually killed, strangled in 2008 by her husband. He served 2 years in prison for involuntary manslaughter. The Post and Courier found case after case where women whose abusers were well known, where victims' fear of harm was clearly understood by neighbors and even the authorities, but still the abuse ended in death. In South Carolina, the murder rate for women in the state is twice the national murder rate for women. Glenn Smith is the project's editor at the Post and Courier who helped to take on this extensive, groundbreaking project, which he hopes will encourage real reform.
Last year, the Violence Policy Center in Washington, D.C. ranked South Carolina number one in the nation in the rate of men killing women. We had been in the top 10 for the past 15 years and had been number one 3 times. My colleagues and I started talking about it and said we really need to get at why this is happening. What are the factors that are driving this violence here that are pushing us at the top of the list, a small state leading the nation in violence against women?
Is there some culture of tolerance for domestic violence that you discovered in South Carolina?
I think there is, to some degree. It's a very patriarchal society here, has been since its inception, very male-dominated power structure in government and business and other walks of life. I think there is a long-standing traditional belief, religious-based to some degree, that a man's home is his castle. What goes on there is his own business, and people, to some degree, again, turn a blind eye to this violence. It's not something that's often discussed outside the home.
What surprised you? What cases did you look at? And what, you know, particular stories stood out?
Well, we looked at over 300 cases that occurred since 2005. A number of them were just horrifying. One that really comes to mind is a 2012 case out of Richland County near the state capital of Columbia. A woman named Takora Thomas, she was 27 years old, had been trying to leave her husband, who did not want to give up on the relationship. She did everything she could possibly think of to protect herself, restraining orders, bought herself a taser, changed the locks on the house, notified people, called the police, and nothing saved her. She was essentially left to her own devices in the end. Her husband, when she came home to clear out her belongings to leave, he was hiding in the closet, jumped out, killed her, tried to kill her mom. He's now serving a 45-year prison sentence.
What does law enforcement do in these cases? Do they think there's a problem? Is there any preventive measure that you discovered in the state of South Carolina?
There's no coordinated effort. I think that's part of the problem. In some places like Massachusetts and Maryland, it's a much more coordinated effort where police, prosecutors, probation officers, victim advocates, they work together to try to determine the cases that are most at risk, high-risk cases, and come up with a plan to protect those victims. Here, it's very hit or miss. Some departments do a decent job. Others are very undertrained, not sure what they're doing. I don't think it's ambivalence at all on the police part. I think it's a lot of cases they don't know what to do to protect these people, or they're not aware of the danger they're in.
You know, one of the things that's not hit or miss as a result of your investigation is the idea that this notion of violence and tolerance of violence is inherited, passed from generation to generation.
Yeah, I heard that over and over again in talking to victims and talking to counselors and police. They might go to a home after a domestic violence incident and they see the son punching the mom or punching his little sister. Guys grow up to believe that this is how you treat women. Women grow up to believe that this is how you're supposed to be treated by your man. So it really is, I think, passed on from generation to generation.
What is the impact on young people in some of the families that you looked at? Do you have a story or an incident which really underscores that part of the problem?
Yeah, there was a fellow we spoke to, Christian Rainey, from the city of North Charleston. He was away at college in Louisiana a few years ago when he got a call from home telling him to come home right away, and they wouldn't say why. He came home and found that his stepfather had been charged with killing his mom and his four siblings. And he has spent the past few years trying to come to terms with that. And he's now a firefighter in North Charleston, but it's still something he struggles with mightily.
If you are a woman who feels that you're at risk, what are the steps that you can take? I mean, what infrastructure exists in the way of shelters or any kind of sanctuary?
Well, we have 18 domestic violence shelters in this state. And that compares to 46 animal shelters, one for each county. So some counties are better off than others. The urban areas, I think, have better resources. A few rural areas have answered the call, but there's still a lot of gaps in the safety net.
What do you think could be done at the state level to correct this? Is it a matter of legislation or more awareness?
I think it's a combination of both. I think some of our laws are fairly lenient. When it comes to punishment on a first offense, criminal domestic violence charge, it's a maximum of 30 days in jail. And 10 years passes, that wipes off your record. 5 years passes, you can petition to have it expunged from your record, even if you've been convicted. That compares to if you abuse your dog, that's a 5-year felony.
That's outrageous.
Yeah, we thought so.
Is there a quote from an individual, say, an actual perpetrator or a woman victim in one of these cases that stands out in your mind?
One quote that comes to mind is came from a woman named Alicia Alvarez, who had struggled with abuse and trying to leave a really damaging relationship. And she was trying to explain to us why it's so hard for women in these positions to leave. And she said, it begins with these little criticisms, the second guessing of everything you do. And these abusers, she said, they get in your brain so that when they tell you you are worthless, you truly believe it. And I mean, that's a very stark reality for somebody to be living in.
Absolutely. Glenn Smith, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Glenn Smith is a projects editor for The Post and Courier in Charleston, South Carolina.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.